About an issue. Every single bishop who heads a diocese has now spoken out against the mandate, and they need to know you support them. We're at an unprecedented time in American history, and what we can do is demonstrate an unprecedented response if you commit to it. Visit StopHHS.com and sign the petition. We now have over 50,000 signatures. If you've already signed, then commit right now to getting 10 others to sign the petition. Numbers are important. Let's make a thunderous statement to the President, Kathleen Sebelius, our lawmakers, and the press.
Catholic Radio in Metro Detroit. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti Detroit, or on the Internet at WDEO.net.
With the New York Times in one hand and the Catechism of the Catholic Church in the other, Al Cresta is ready for conversations of consequence.
Democrats have literally fled the state.
Head out on the highway.
The Egyptian president, Hosni Mubarak, has finally stepped down.
Walk like an Egyptian.
Planned Parenthood is the largest abortion provider in America. Planned Parenthood is the largest recipient of federal funding under Title X.
I'm a fool to do your dirty work.
Broadcasting from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and taking a closer Catholic look at current events, issues, and ideas. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
Great question. That is a really interesting question.
You asked another interesting question.
You just asked the $64,000 question.
B-E-A beautiful.
Okay, let's do it.
You're listening to the best of Cresta in the Afternoon.
A very good afternoon to you. I'm Al Cresta, and we've got another hour to talk about the things that matter most. Islam was the first religion Christianity encountered that, as theological doctrine, sought to convert Christians and regulate their religious practices. Islamic studies in Europe began as a Christian missionary enterprise, born out of necessity rather than interest. What about Islamic studies programs today throughout the United States? What do they teach about Islam? And are they governed by a certain type of political correctness? We're going to be talking with Andrew Bizat, who in fact has his master's degree in Islamic studies and Christian-Muslim relations from Hartford Seminary in Connecticut. And he's conducted educational forums on Islam and Catholicism since 2007. We'll also take a look at some of the common misconceptions about Islam. But first, we hit the headlines.
Thanks, Al. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Monday, March 5th. It's the Feast of St. John Joseph of the Cross. Opening a White House meeting with President Obama and Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli Prime Minister says the bond with the United States is strong.
Israel and the United States share common values, that we defend common interests, that we face common enemies. Iran's leaders know that too. You know, for them, you're the great Satan, we're the little Satan.
The meeting was set amid growing concerns about Iran's nuclear efforts and fears that Israel may try to attack Iran. Obama insisted both Israel and the U.S. prefer to settle the Iranian nuclear crisis diplomatically. Obama wants to give international sanctions time to work, but has also said that it would be unacceptable for Iran to have a nuclear weapon. The two leaders declined to take questions before closing the doors for their private meeting. But most Americans responding to a new poll want the U.S. to stay neutral if Israel were to attack Iran. A Pew Research Center survey found a narrow 51% of those polled want the U.S. to stay out of the fray if hostilities occur. Senator John McCain, he's calling for U.S.-led airstrikes on Syria. Senator John McCain of Arizona says the time for diplomacy is over.
The United States should lead an international effort to protect key population centers in Syria, especially in the north, through airstrikes on Assad's forces.
The Arizona Republican said Syrian President Bashar al-Assad is continuing a campaign of deadly violence against his own people. Meantime, McCain accused Iran, Russia, and China of lending, quote, shameless support to Assad's regime. He criticized the Obama administration's diplomatic approach to the Syrian crisis. GOP presidential candidate Rick Santorum hopes to chalk up some victories on Super Tuesdays as Republicans vote in 10 states. Campaigning in Ohio, the former Pennsylvania senator said he is doing well despite being, quote, badly outspent by former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney.
We're being outspent about 6-1 again, just about every state. I mean, it's remarkable that we're doing as well as we are, guys. I mean, we're just getting pummeled here with robocalls and direct mail and television advertising.
Ohio borders Santorum's home state of Pennsylvania. Georgetown University law student Sandra Fluke's not impressed with a recent apology from radio host Rush Limbaugh. Fluke says today that Limbaugh's apology after calling her a slut and a prostitute on the air doesn't amount to much. She pointed out his apology came as some of his show's advertisers pulled their ads over the incident. At least 7 advertisers have pulled their business from Limbaugh's show. The IRS says a new software system is to blame for some slow tax refunds this year. The problem is tied to the computer upgrades that were meant to make the filing process easier and quicker, an IRS national average. And your fascinating fact for the day? Drinking water after eating reduces an acid in your mouth by 61%. Filling in for Nick Tom, Steve Clark, Ave Maria, Radio News.
You're listening to the best of Cresta in the Afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. I'm Al Cresta. My guest, Andrew Bizad, has a master's degree in Islamic studies and Christian-Muslim relations from Hartford Seminary. He's been conducting educational forums on Islam and Catholicism since 2007. Andrew, it's great to make your acquaintance. Thanks.
Al, it's a pleasure having me on your show. Thank you so much for the invite.
I lived in Hartford for a while, and I lived in New Haven for most of the first 16 years of my life. So,
wow.
Did you like Connecticut?
Well, Connecticut is pretty good. I was, once again, born and raised there, so I'm sure you and I know many of the same places, both in Hartford and New Haven. I actually grew up in West Hartford, very close to Hartford, so I'm very well acquainted with it, and I live actually close to New Haven now.
Oh, I get back there about once a year to visit my parents. But let's talk about what I asked you to talk about today before I gave us a distraction. Islamic studies began in Europe as a Christian missionary enterprise. Islam wasn't studied for the sake of Islam?
That's very correct. Islam began as something out of necessity rather than desire, because Islam came into Europe not as Christianity. Christianity was brought, as we know from history, peacefully by missionaries and people speaking about Jesus, and it simply spread into society. Islam came with the Islamic military invasions of North Africa and Arabia, spreading into Europe on both ends. In the east, it spread into the Byzantine Empire, what we know today as Turkey. Mm-hmm. And in the west, it came in with the invasion of Spain under the Muslim general Tariq ibn Ziyad. In addition, you also had Muslim pirates beginning as early as 650, launching slave raids and military raids against Greece, Italy, and the coast of France, seeking to capture people as well as to make converts and establish a presence. The Catholic Church was forced to respond to Islam simply because, as you mentioned, these people came with the intention of converting Christians and assimilating the entire, all of Christendom, Catholic Europe, into the Muslim world.
Mm. The now deceased scholar Edward Said has claimed that that Western scholarship regarding Islam was hopelessly tainted by, quote, Orientalism. What is Orientalism?
I always laugh when I hear the name Edward Said, because Edward Said was, many people have a great respect for him, but mm-hmm. his vision of Orientalism was actually quite more bigoted than the bigotry he claimed to espouse that Westerners held against the Muslim world.
I agree.
Very simply put, Orientalism, as Mustashriqiyya in Arabic, it's the study of the East, and it was a common catch-all term used to study the Muslim peoples of North Africa, Arabia, as well as the Indian subcontinent. And in some cases, it was also used to describe the studies of the peoples of the Far East, India, specifically East India, China, Japan, and so on. Orientalism was born out of the Islamic military invasions, primarily starting in Spain, because Spain was the first country in Catholic Europe that had the most consistent exposure to Islam. Christians, non-Catholic Christians, specifically the Oriental Orthodox churches and the Assyrian Church of the East, and even the Byzantine Church, and even the Byzantine churches of the Eastern Orthodox had a lot of exposure to Islam, but much of that was done within a military context. In the West, you actually had a strong Islamic presence in the Iberian Peninsula, and this formed the basis for scholarship, seeking first to educate people in order that they might, one, be able to know their faith and articulate it vis-a-vis Islam, but also that they might be able to, in turn, make converts of Islam, mm-hmm. of Muslims, to bring them into the faith. And eventually, Orientalism grew with the expansion of Western colonialism, namely from the British, the French, the Spanish, the Portuguese, and even the Italians and the Germans in their works in Africa and Turkey. So what Orientalism really is it brought the study of Islam into Europe, and it made it into a formal academic discipline. Eventually, it developed into a discipline apart from religious convictions, so it became a secular branch of study. Mm-hmm. And it remained that way for many years until shortly after World War II.
Yeah, what happened after World War II?
Yep. What happened after World War II, there were several things. It actually parallels my experience at Hartford Seminary. Hartford Seminary was where I got my master's degree from, was the premier Protestant missionary school to the Muslim world. And if you look at the people who started the Center for Islamic Studies there, Duncan Black MacDonald, Reverend Samuel Zwemer, mm-hmm. these were truly great Protestant intellectual minds, as well as very faithful, believing Protestant people in Christianity and not in Islam.
Didn't Zwemer serve as a missionary for a while?
Yes, he did. He was the founder of the Muslim World Journal at Hartford Seminary, which I will mention an interesting story about that in just a second. But what happened in around 1950 was there was a general shift following World War II. As we know, Europe's Christian heritage had been severely beaten down in the minds of many people.
Right.
And they thought to divest themselves from that Christian heritage, to create something that was wholly secular.
Yeah.
And so with that, with Islamic studies...
Just before we go there, did they blame Christianity for the tragedies of the world wars?
That
Christianity had its cultural opportunity, and it was demonstrated that it couldn't bring lasting peace.
And that is correct. That was one of the arguments that was used. That argument had actually been made since the Enlightenment.
Right.
One of the interesting points with this is many of the people in the Enlightenment who spoke against Christianity were also very favorably disposed towards Islam, simply for the fact that they saw it as a counterbalance to Christian influence. Edward Gibbon was one of such people. And so when this frame of mind took root in Europe, it spread like wildfire throughout the universities. Now, this is the reason why in 1950... Hartford Seminary, the missionaries came back, and the president of the mission school said that Muslims already knew God, therefore they were not in need of Jesus or hearing about him, therefore there was no need for us to evangelize them. And that rapid fire spiraled down with the cultural changes of the 60s and the 1970s into a system where Islam would be favorably disposed to an academia with a slow growing prejudice against Christianity. And this was this process was fueled by the rapid influx of millions of petrodollars given by Muslim countries, most notoriously Saudi Arabia, but also countries such as Syria, Egypt, Algeria, Morocco, Tunisia, you name it. Many of these countries did this intentionally.
Does Saudi Arabia support that center down in Georgetown that John Esposito heads up?
Supported. They back an incredibly large amount of it. John Esposito is paid nearly entirely by money that comes from the Saudis.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay.
Yes.
So we have this weird thing happening where the home religion of Christianity is disdained, and the foreign religion of Islam is elevated, and scholarship goes on being critical of its own family in the West, but less critical of outsiders.
Very correct.
Is that just, you know, what's funny is that sort of strikes me as something of a distortion of Catholic self-examination. we try to avoid thinking of ourselves more highly than we ought. But in this case, it looks as though they went bent over backwards to think worse of themselves than they ought.
Yes, and many of the people are very sincerely believe these convictions. It stems not only from a sense of Western guilt and a Western guilt complex, but it also stems from a part of Islamic theology, which happens to be my specialty. And Islamic theology teaches very strongly that it is superior to all other religions. Now, every religion, regardless of what it is going to say, that it is better than the other. That's to be understood.
Sure.
But the difference with Islam is that in Islamic theological teaching, one's human dignity and thereby one's right to exist comes from obedience to and practice of orthodox Islamic theological teaching. So, therefore, Islam is not only an inherently superior religion, but it is a religion that cannot be debated, it cannot be disagreed with, it can only be supported. To not support Islam is to offend Islam, or to question Islam is to offend Islam, and everybody else, anything that could be favorably said about them, must be either spoken about or in an Islamic context, or it must be downplayed because that would be an affront to Islam.
So there's not reciprocity here. We're not playing on a level playing field.
No, there is no concept of reciprocity in a Western sense, or I should say in a Catholic sense in Islam, simply because Islam is the religion. Islam is, as Islam teaches, the way of all human existence, and there is nothing outside of that. Therefore, anything that is not Islamic is not acceptable and not even worth debate and not even worth discussing in a positive light. Unless it happens to be to the favor of Islam.
I'll come back to this topic later, but does this remain true even with those Muslims who are strongly influenced by the West and who are urging democratic reforms?
You bring up an excellent point, and this is something that confuses a lot of people. I'm so glad you brought this up. You know, there is always a difference, I mentioned, between the Muslim people and the religion. People are going to be people. People will believe as they will. As we know, it's our own Catholic faith.
Sure.
And I always use the example of abortion. Abortion has always been a sin. It's been this way since the beginning of time. However, there are Catholics that we know that publicly support abortion. There are priests and bishops
right.
who do. This
right.
is well known.
Andrew, I'll tell you what. Hold it there. I want you to pick it up on the other side of the break, okay?
Sure.
My guest is Andrew Bizat. We're talking about misconceptions regarding Islam and also his experience receiving an advanced degree in Islamic studies from Hartford Seminary. It's fascinating to get a look at the academy.
Ciena, the Catholic mobile phone company, is more than just a cell phone service. Ciena is pro-life and pro-family. And contrary to other phone companies, we actively work for a culture of life in America. With Ciena, 5% of your voice plan goes to your favorite Catholic or pro-life charity, to date over $1 million. Ciena uses the same nationwide digital network as the big guys, without contracts or termination fees. Flexible calling plans allow you to support a pro-life company and the culture of life with every call you make on your mobile phone. There's a wide selection of phones and calling plans with text messaging available as well. Also, you pay no fees to change your plan, and you get unlimited mobile-to-mobile calling with other Ciena customers on most plans. With Ciena, you can use your voice for the voiceless. Don't waste your cell phone service. Learn more at 877-4-Ciena or on the web at prolifecatholic.com.
You're listening to Ave Maria Radio.
Ave Maria Radio.
Ave Maria School of Law is a private law school faithful to the Catholic intellectual tradition, located in Naples, Florida. Ave Maria gives you the opportunity to integrate faith and reason, and seeks to educate the whole person by exploring the Catholic intellectual tradition and natural law. Our graduates are working in the nation's top law firms and judicial clerkships. Ave Maria School of Law provides financial scholarships. More information is available at avemarialaw.edu.
Cresta in the Afternoon is brought to you in part by the St. Gregory Retreat Center, a fully licensed and internationally accredited alternative to traditional drug and alcohol treatment. This model has utilized the latest techniques based on the most current scientific research. More information about the St. Gregory Retreat Center is available at 888-778-5833. That's 888-778-5833.
I knew Mom wanted to stay at home. It's the center of her family, her life. But helping Mom stay in her home while managing mine was just too much. Honestly, it wasn't just about me. Mom didn't want me to be her caretaker. She wanted me to be her daughter. I felt so alone until I found out about Home Instead Senior Care. When we met the people at Home Instead, we just knew they were different. The experience was personal. They understood how we were all feeling. They just cared. Because of Home Instead Senior Care, Mom now has a caregiver who can help her stay home. But more importantly, they've made an incredible connection I never expected. And Home Instead changed my life, too. I've found balance again, and most importantly, for Mom and me, I get to be her daughter again.
Home Instead Senior Care. To us, it's personal.
To learn more, call toll-free 866-922-1400. That's 866-922-1400. Or at homeinstead.com.
The Ave Maria Communications Guild invites you to activate your faith. Celine Area Players invites you to relive the humor in the Carol Burnett Tribute Show, March 8th through the 11th at Stone Arch Event Center in Celine. Enjoy favorite sketches straight from the show performed live. For further details and to reserve tickets, call 734-904-1874 or visit CelineAreaPlayers.org. Holy Spirit Church in Brighton invites the family to a free showing of the movie Courageous, Saturday, March 10th. This movie is rated PG-13 and was made by the creators of Fireproof. Popcorn and pop will be provided. Call 810-231-9199 for more information. You can find many more events at our website, AveMariaRadio.net. To become a member of the Guild, call 877-288-1077.
You're listening to the best of Cresta in the Afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. With me, Andrew Bisat. He has advanced degrees in Islamic studies and Christian-Muslim relations from Hartford Seminary in Connecticut, talking about misconceptions regarding Islam and also about how Islamic studies programs are administered. I asked before the break, Andrew, does that sense of Muslim superiority operate in the lives of even those Muslim scholars who have been influenced by the West and who are presently openly advocating democratic reform?
Yes. With regard to that, as I mentioned briefly before the break, it's very similar to the issue with abortion in the Catholic Church. Whereas abortion is a sin, it is well known, and the Church has always been against it, but there are Catholics who still support it. And despite the fact that their opinions are against the faith which they claim to espouse. Mm-hmm. The same as with Muslims. You'll have Muslims who will have throughout history heretical opinions, or opinions, and heretical I mean in terms that they disagree with Islamic teaching,
right,
or people that are influenced by the West or Western traditions. And this is very well known, and I support this. But the fact is that individual beliefs, or even beliefs of groups of people, do not change orthodox Islamic theological teaching. The Islamic superiority problem, the problem of Islamic theology with regard to human dignity and with regard to Christian-Muslim relations, and as well as war against non-Muslims and the killing of Muslim apostates, all of these issues and many more, they're theological issues. So therefore, an individual person might disagree with them, but that is against what the religion teaches.
Yeah.
And a person who does believe in these teachings, it is not against, they believe them because Islamic theology teaches them so.
Yeah. So I have a friend, Mustafa Akyol, who's a Turkish journalist, who's just published a book advocating democracy and, for, you know, consent to the governed and free markets and all this. He, you know, is a very, from his self-reporting, he's a very committed Muslim. I like him very much, wonderful guy. But I've always thought that he's a little far out on a limb here, that I'm in the position of supporting somebody who, from an Orthodox Muslim standpoint, is a heretic. Should we be supporting heretics?
Yes. I will say that straight out. Yes.
Okay. Very good.
Because one of the most important issues with Muslim heretics is many of these Muslim heretics, their beliefs come about because they see a true and earnest disagreement with Islamic teaching.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Many times, these people who are heretics actually end up leaving Islam because they realize that Islam is insufficient to answer not just their questions about life and human existence, but that the religion itself is inferior to something that is more noble and that honors both man, God, and creation in a much better way, such as the Catholic faith.
Yeah, yeah. Talk to me about your experience at Hartford Seminary. I imagine it has a pretty good concentration of Muslim students as well.
Yeah, I actually, just for your audience, I wrote an article about this for the National Association of Scholars. If you Google my name, the article should come up. It's entitled "Islamo-Correctness at Hartford Seminary." I had a very interesting experience because I was one of the few Christians in the program, and I was also, I think, the only Catholic in the program.
Okay.
And I am obviously very vocal, respectful, very vocal, and firmly believing in my faith and what it teaches.
Mm-hmm.
And I experienced a host of interesting encounters. I would receive death threats from students.
Really?
Because they said I was an infidel, that I would not convert to Islam, or that I would not consent to Islamic teaching.
So in a Western theological institute, I mean, Connecticut, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah.
New England.
Yeah.
You received death threats while you were enrolled in an Islamic studies program at Hartford Seminary from fellow students who happened to be Muslim and disagreed with your denial of Muhammad's prophet status.
Oh, yes, and not just Muhammad, but just Islam in general.
Yeah.
I was regarded as an infidel. I was told on multiple occasions that I don't deserve to live and that I need to be killed. Oh, yeah.
Did they make any plans to carry out that judgment?
Usually a lot of times when this happens, it's talk because this is a quick note about Islam. When people think of terrorism in Islam, they think of a guy going into a building and blowing himself up. That's not true. True terrorism in Islam, al-Ra'b wal-Irhab, the meaning of this is to act, the meaning of this is to, by any means possible, to shut down disagreement of or criticism of Islam.
Wow.
So shutting down of agreement can mean threats. It can mean killing somebody. It's a very Machiavellian approach in that Al-raya yubarriru al-wisata. The ends justify the means.
So here we are in the West, where we have a tradition of academic freedom and where we generally encourage even theological debate, and we expect that people can have strong convictions, but we also, because we believe human beings are made in the image and likeness of God, we don't think they ought to be coerced when it comes to these convictions. And consequently, we're supposed to have a very free and lively academic discussion in America. Nothing like that occurs in Islam?
Well, in Islam it does not, because you even said man is created in the image and likeness of God. Islam does not believe that. Islam says, خَلَقَنَا الْإِنسَانَ فِي أَحْسَنَ تَكْوِيمٍ فَرَدَدْنَاهُ إِلَى أَفْضَلِ السَّافِلِينَ إِلَّا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا وَعَمِلُوا الصَّالِحَاتِ فَلَهُمْ مَجْرَاءُ غَيْرُ مَمْنُونٍ we have created man in the best of molds. Then do we abase him to the lowest of the low, except for those who believe and do righteous deeds, in the reference to the Muslims. For they shall have a reward in failing. But then the passage goes on that the ones who disbelieve in Allah and who do not practice, they will be thrown into hell and subjected to all kinds of punishments. One's human dignity in Islam does not come from something that is intrinsically a part of one's existence. It is something that is bestowed upon man, and it is conditional upon his acceptance or rejection of Islam. As Muhammad said in Islamic sacred tradition, "Kullu awlad wuladat musulman, lakinna waladayhu yaf'aluhu nusaran, yahudan wa mushrikan." Every child is born a Muslim, but his parents make him a Jew, a Christian, or a pagan. So as such, a Christian or a Jew or whatever you believe that, if it is not Islam, it means at some point you had to willingly reject your intrinsically created Islamic nature. Therefore, you do not have human dignity, and you can, it's not absolute, but it is permissible for you to be mistreated and or abused and such. This is why there is no concept of free thought in Islam, and free thought is only understood to be that which is acceptable to Islam.
Wow. So, respect in Islam is conditioned by avoiding criticism of Islam. The only way you can be regarded with respect is if you don't criticize Islam.
That is very true, and this is a persistent pattern that you see throughout the Muslim world and Muslim history, beginning from Muhammad's lifetime all the way until now. Muhammad very explicitly mentions many times in Islamic sacred tradition, when his followers, potential followers, would question him, that they are going to go to hell because they ask too many questions, and they should just believe. Mm. People who simply disagreed with Muhammad were assassinated. There are many stories of this. One of the most infamous ones was of an old Jewish man by the name of Ka'b bin Ashraf. This is written about in the original biography of Muhammad. It's been translated as the Life of Muhammad by Ibn Hisham, and you can purchase it on Amazon for $30, translated by Alfred Guillaume. And in this story, which is very well known, this old man said he disagreed with Islam, and he made a poem that laughed at Muhammad. So Muhammad had this man murdered in a very horrible way. He had him stabbed in the chest, the knife pulled down, split his bowels, and left the entrails lying in the street of Medina in Saudi Arabia. So people would see him, people would see the remains and know that this is the power that Muhammad wields over those who disagree with him or oppose him. And this is just one of many stories. There were many people that this happened to or similar incidents.
Well, what role does reason play in Islam? Because the relationship between faith, you know, the synthesis of faith and reason that the Catholic tradition demonstrates is, we believe, a great gift to the world.
It is a great gift, and it's a wonderful gift, and I'm laughing to myself as you say this, because in Islam, Allah's nature is not love. Okay, Allah's nature is there are 99 different names that Islam uses to describe Allah, but these are attributes, literally adjectives, sifat, that talk about Allah. His nature is only understood in the context of his will to do what he wills, as he wills, for the sake of will itself. As the Quran, chapter 14, verse 29 says, وَإِنَّ اللَّهُ يَفْعَلُ مَا يُشَاءُ. Allah doeth as he willeth. And so Allah can act in any way. The Quran, there's a very famous Muslim prayer supplication. Allah guides whom he guides, and whomever Allah guides will never be misguided because Allah has guided him. And Allah misguides whomever he misguides. Whomever Allah misguides will never be guided because Allah has misguided him.
So
there is no concept of faith and reason,
so,
because reason is subjected to Islamic belief and the will of Allah to act as he absolutely wills. There was a group of Muslims in the 9th century known as the Mu'tazilites, and they tried to synthesize faith and reason, and it was because they were trying to do this that they were horribly exterminated from existence.
Yeah,
they were horribly exterminated.
Robert Riley has gone into that chapter at good length in a recent book, and I found it just depressing. I mean, because this seems to be the attitude that persists today.
Yes, and the reason why it persists is because that is what Islam teaches.
Yeah.
It's not a matter of you know Muslims or people from this part of the world have some kind of intellectual or physical defect. It is because this is what the religion teaches, and as you mentioned, the divide between faith and reason causes tremendous problems. It causes unsolvable theological problems.
Indeed, indeed. Andrew, can you stay with me another segment?
I would love to.
Great. Andrew Bisad, my guest, 5 common misconceptions about Islam, as well as taking a look at his experience in the Islamic Studies program at Hartford Seminary, which is, the large Muslim population there.
Cresta in the Afternoon is brought to you in part by CatholicBusinessPages.com, your national and local online business directory, connecting Christian business professionals with Catholic consumers. Advertisers have taken a stand to support Christian family values in the marketplace. It's important to support businesses that embrace life and promote the gospel of Christ. And at CatholicBusinessPages.com, business professionals have taken that stand. CatholicBusinessPages.com, a great place to get connected.
Do we expect too much of our teenagers nowadays, putting them under unusual amounts of stress? I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. I did a TV show once with that premise. The interviewer asked me that question at the top of the show. I know what he expected me to say. He expected me to say, yes, we're overstressing our children. I think he was stunned when I turned to the camera and said, no, I think in most cases we don't expect enough of our children. Our teenagers. We don't expect enough in the way of manners. We don't expect enough in the way of school performance. We don't expect enough in the way of help around the house. We don't expect enough in the way of character. He was stunned, and the audience stood up and clapped. A widespread notion is these days we overstress our children. We push them too hard. Yes, there are those people who push too hard on their kids. But in my experience, a much broader issue is that more and more people are not expecting enough of their children. We don't hold them to standards that they're quite capable of achieving for fear of overstressing them. Don't be afraid to be different. Don't be afraid to have your children reach for their absolute limits. And in so doing, they will be very different, even weird sometimes, from the others out there. I'm Dr. Ray.
Good day, I'm Al Cresta. On February 17th, Congress held hearings on the HHS mandate. Bishop Lori testified, and many others as well. I hope you heard about it in the commercial media. I wouldn't count on it, though. I've noticed, and you probably couldn't help noticing, how quickly the press coverage dropped off after the president gave them the opportunity to declare this over. Despite that fact, never before have I seen the American bishop so exercised about an issue. Every single bishop who heads a diocese has now spoken out against the mandate, and they need to know you support them. We're at an unprecedented time in American history, and what we can do is demonstrate an unprecedented response if you commit to it. Visit StopHHS.com and sign the petition. We now have over 50,000 signatures. If you've already signed, then commit right now to getting 10 others to sign the petition. Numbers are important. Let's make a thunderous statement to the President, Kathleen Sebelius, our lawmakers, and the press.
Obama administration refuses religious exemptions.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony list, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
The Obama administration has announced it will not expand exemptions for religious organizations when it comes to insurance. So, a Catholic hospital, for example, will have to provide employee health insurance that covers birth control and sterilization. Even the liberal Washington Post, no friend of the Catholic Church, calls this what it is, a restriction of religious liberty. The administration says the mandate will come into effect after a year. Archbishop Timothy Dolan commented on the delay. In effect, the president is saying we have a year to figure out how to violate our consciences.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelter, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.
You're listening to the best of Cresta in the Afternoon.
And a good afternoon to you. I'm Al Cresta. With me, Andrew Bizat. He is holds a master's degree in Islamic studies and Christian-Muslim relations from Hartford Seminary in Connecticut. Taking a look at the recent articles that he's written on Islam and misconceptions we have, generally have, about Islam. Back in 1987, I hosted a panel made up on the relationship between faith and public life. And I had on that panel, we had a Shiite Muslim, we had a Dutch Reformed Calvinist, we had a Thomist from the Catholic tradition, and we had a thoroughgoing secularist with us. And through that, that was my first experience in conversation with a Muslim. And during the lunch period, I was really surprised at the stridency. You had a Calvinist, you had a Catholic, you had a secularist, and they all deeply disagreed. They were intelligent people, deep commitments. They disagreed. They were firm. They were strong. But they were respectful. This particular Shiite Muslim was strident, shrill, continually discussing talking about things in such a way that basically shut down conversation. Now, what I'm interested in knowing is what would happen if I had a panel like this today and refused to refer to Muhammad as a prophet, or make it even more clear, because I've said this, you have to regard him, it seems to me, as a false prophet, something, but we have not found a way that Muslims would accept which would allow us to call him a prophet, and Muslims would also call him a prophet, and the words would mean the same. So at this point, I think he has to be considered a false prophet. What happens?
You mentioned the false prophet, man. That's very correct, because the answer, and people say that's insulting. Well, the answer is very simple. Islam, in its most fundamental form, I'm just addressing this particular topic, it teaches that Jesus is not God. That is... understood.
Right.
You hear the Muslim credo of faith, La ilaha illallah wa Muhammadun Rasulullah, there is no God but Allah. The understanding of that by all the Muslim commentators, classical times until now, is that it is an explicit renunciation of the Christian Trinity and of Jesus' divinity. So to believe that Muhammad was the prophet automatically means to deny that Jesus was God.
Right.
And likewise, to believe that Jesus is God, as it means to be a Christian, automatically means that one denies Muhammad's claims to prophecy, and
right,
therefore he is a false prophet.
Yeah. I think that, so in a public setting like I had there, when I referred to Muhammad, what would you suggest?
Well, if one was to have a discussion about it, it depends on the situation, but I would usually say, speaking about specific issues,
yes.
A lot of times what many Muslim scholars and thinkers will do is they will try to speak around Muhammad, and they will try to focus on particular notable aspects of his life. And there were certain notable aspects,
yes,
to Muhammad's actions and his deeds. However, the fact remains that if one looks at all of Islamic sacred tradition and sacred text in connection from his time until now, from all the scholars and all of the commentary, and all of the hadith, the stories of Muhammad that related by Orthodox Muslims and written down, Muhammad is anything but a false prophet. He is a very violent man.
Mm-hmm.
He engaged in many horrific, nearly unspeakable, on radio at least,
mm-hmm,
deeds. And he was very virulently opposed to any kind to agreement except that which was favorable to him in Islam.
Mm-hmm.
So it is possible to dialogue with people, and as the Catholic Church knows this very well, in a human sense. In other words, one person might have certain beliefs about Islam. This is his opinion of it. And that might be at deference to what Islam as a religion teaches. But as far as debating with the actual religion goes, there is no real way to debate with it, because the religion is what it is. The real dialogue with Muslims is found in not in asserting our Catholic faith, and in turn showing them that there is a better way than Islam.
Is it possible to make, this is kind of a question that evangelical Protestants in particular have been asking, is it possible to make a commitment to follow Christ and yet stay within the mosque?
No. Well, let me put it like this. In Islamic countries, many Muslims stay in the mosque simply because apostasy from Islam is a crime punishable by death, because it's a renunciation of one's human dignity. As Muhammad said in Islamic sacred tradition, "Man badala dinihi lighayri min al-Islam faqtalihi." He who changes his religion from Islam, kill him. And this has been supported by every Muslim thinker and every Orthodox thinker and scholar since Muhammad's time. So, given the situation, many times Muslims will convert in secret, but they will stay in the mosque, giving the appearance of being a Muslim, simply so they avoid what would be a truly horrible death if they were to come out.
So they can still pray, they can still fast, they can, they can stay under the radar, I guess.
Yeah, and because many times,
is that healthy?
It's not an ideal situation, but for many Muslims, this is a reality because of the horrible, horrible consequences that await. I mean, it is true that the martyrs of the past and many of the great saints, when they would leave their religion, they would publicly preach against it, and many of them were truly horrifically killed. I suggest anybody who wants to know about this, take a look at the martyrs of Cordoba. These were Muslims who apostatized, usually Muslims who apostatized from the Islamic religion, became Catholic, and many of them were subjected to horrible punishments, such as being boiled in lead and crushed with rocks and very nasty things.
And these acts are carried out in obedience to the teaching, not in contradiction of the teaching.
That is correct, and the Quran even asserts this very clearly. And Muhammad did many of these acts. And it must be remembered that in Islam, Muhammad is al-insan al-kamil. He is the perfect man. And therefore, it is for a Muslim to emulate his actions through living his faith. And what did Muhammad do to those who disagreed? He had them beheaded. He personally had people's chests burned out with hot coals. There was one case of a group of men who apostatized. It's known as the Uqul incident, or the Uyayna incident, in the Islamic texts, and it's written about extensively, where a group of men apostatized and killed some of Muhammad's camels in their anger. So Muhammad had some of them crucified, some of them had their eyes torn out, some of them had their tongues cut off, some of them had their hands and feet chopped off on opposite ends, so they could neither stand nor walk, and they were left to die in the desert of starvation and thirst, and he ordered that no one give them, under pain of death, food or water. And this is actually direct. And the reason for this was because Allah revealed in the Quran, as Muhammad claimed, chapter 5, verse 33, the punishment of those who wage war against Allah and His Messenger is execution, crucifixion, the cutting off of the hands and feet from opposite sides, or expulsion from the land. This is their punishment in this life, and a painful punishment awaits them in the afterlife.
Okay, well, here's another question for you in terms of carrying on conversation or our public stance and posture. Should we use the word Allah as a reference to God? It's my understanding that is the generic Arabic word, but talk to me.
Grammatically speaking, yes, it is generic. However, I am averse to it, as well as many Middle Eastern Christians are traditionally averse to it, because of the inference it brings. Simply because the God in the Bible, what is His nature? God's nature is love. First letter of John, chapter 4, verse 8, God is love. Allah, as I mentioned, there is no love in Him. Allah is a God of will. Allah is Allah is the master. He is Ar-Rab. And we, the Muslims, are and Islamic worship literally uses this, they are his abidun, his slaves. Hmm. This is where we get the name Abdullah, the slave of Allah.
Yes.
Because a slave submits to the master, to his dictates, and the master acts however he wills for them, for good or bad, for whatever indescribable reason it may be. We know that God would never act that way because God loves us, and God so loved the world, he sent his only son, so that he who believes in him would not perish but have eternal life.
So don't use Allah because it creates misunderstanding. Continue to refer to God. How do you think the Catholic Church is doing in its carrying on dialogue with Muslims?
The Catholic Church has done more than anybody else to promote dialogue, and they have tried with great, great efforts to do so. I can say this because I had been involved in Catholic-Muslim dialogue at the UN for some time.
Mm-hmm.
And the Catholic Church has worked very hard. The problem, though, with dialogue is precisely that. It requires two people.
Right.
The Catholic Church wants to talk. The Pope has made this very clear. Many of the bishops have made this very clear. However, the Muslim side does not want to discuss, because, as I mentioned earlier, dialogue and discussion of Islam is only acceptable as long as it provides a view of Islam that is in a favorable light and does not question Islamic teachings.
So they don't discuss, they proclaim.
Exactly, they proclaim. They're more interested in, they see dialogue as a tool for facilitating direct evangelization without even listening to the other side. And this is why many times we'll see Catholic-Muslim dialogues that will start up, but after the first two meetings, they immediately stop, or the Catholic side is unable to initiate contact with the Muslim side, or the dialogues are put off because there is a lack of desire to discuss them. I'll give a great example. When the Pope, our most recent Pope, Benedict, tried to open dialogue with the Muslim world. He approached one of the head sheikhs of Al-Azhar University, it's the Islamic equivalent of Oxford.
Mm-hmm.
And just recently, as 3 months ago, the sheikh called off all dialogue with the Vatican because he said the Pope had offended Islam.
Yeah.
And the offense of Islam specifically was that the Pope called for Christians in the Middle East to be respected and not have violence directed against them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll tell you, great talking with you, Andrew, and I hope we can carry on this conversation further.
I would love to.
Andrew Bizad, fascinating. We'll have his information posted at AveMariaRadio.net.
Logos Bible Software brings the sacred tradition to life, fully integrated with Scripture. Logos links the Bible to hundreds of books, from the works of St. Augustine to the Catechism of the Catholic Church, literally surrounding the Scripture with the tradition. And Logos works on your desktop and your mobile devices, so you can take your vast Catholic library wherever you go. Logos will transform the way you read the Bible. A demo video is available at logos.com/Catholic.
Good day, I'm Al Cresta.
And I'm Steve Ray.
We're heading up on June 4th and 5th to the Cross in the Woods. It's our Ave Maria radio pilgrimage. So you're here in the United States for this one.
I am, and I oftentimes lead pilgrimages overseas, but this is a local pilgrimage for people that don't maybe have 2 weeks to be away. It's much more affordable, and it can be very spiritually enriching.
I know I'm going to be speaking, and you're going to be speaking there, but what are some of the other things we're going to be doing besides teaching?
We're going to have Mass at the Cross in the Woods. This is the largest crucifix in the world. It's magnificent. Pray through the woods, and we're also going to go shopping in Frankenmuth, and we've got some other wonderful side trips that we're going to take to make this very entertaining and fun for everyone.
Is food provided?
All the meals are provided, yep. There's going to be lunches and dinners and good stuff, too.
So for the Ave Maria Radio Pilgrimage to Cross in the Woods, June 4th and 5th, contact Corporate Travel, 313-565-8888. Extension 121, that's 565-8888, extension 121, or go to AveMariaRadio.net.
Today's programming on 990 WDEO is made possible in part by a contribution made from our day sponsor, to honor a friend, Jim Russo, Communications Director at St. Francis of Assisi Parish in Ann Arbor. Jim is a thrifty yet generous man, and his contributions to the parish are substantial.
Thank you, Jim, for all you do.
You can be a day sponsor, too. Call toll-free 1-877-288-1077 and say, I want to be a day sponsor.
Good day, I'm Al Cresta. On February 17th, Congress held hearings on the HHS mandate. Bishop Lori testified, and many others as well. I hope you heard about it in the commercial media. I wouldn't count on it, though. I've noticed, and you probably couldn't help noticing, how quickly the press coverage dropped off after the president gave them the opportunity to declare this over. Despite that fact, never before have I seen the American bishop so exercised about an issue. Every single bishop who heads a diocese has now spoken out against the mandate, and they need to know you support them. We're at an unprecedented time in American history, and what we can do is demonstrate an unprecedented response if you commit to it. Visit StopHHS.com and sign the petition. We now have over 50,000 signatures. If you've already signed, then commit right now to getting 10 others to sign the petition. Numbers are important. Let's make a thunderous statement to the President, Kathleen Sebelius, our lawmakers, and the press.
You're listening to the best of Cresta in the Afternoon.
Well, thank you for being with me over the last hour. Andrew is, again, a young scholar who I'm very, very happy to hear from. And you can learn more about the work that he's doing in his Catholic-Muslim forums by emailing him at bizad@yahoo.com. Now, let me spell that for you because it is an unusual spelling. B-I-E-S. B-I-E-S-Z-A-D. That's Bizad. B-I-E-S-Z-A-D at yahoo.com. I think he's more than happy to carry on conversation about this. So get a hold of them. And thank you for being with me over this last hour. We continue to try to look at Islam through the eyes of Scripture and the teaching of the Catholic Church. And this, you wish, you hope that it's reformable. But it doesn't look that way.
Cresta in the Afternoon is produced and distributed by Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan. The executive producer is Nick Tom. The technical engineer is Kara Coulter. To follow up on any of the guests or information presented on today's program, visit the Cresta Guest Archive at AveMariaRadio.net. That's A-V-E-M-A-R-I-A Radio.net. To listen to this or any other edition of Cresta in the Afternoon, visit the audio archives at AveMariaRadio.net. Or to order a CD of the program, call 734-930-4506 or email orders at AveMariaRadio.net. That's 734-930-4506 or orders at AveMariaRadio.net.
Would you like a copy of this program? If you miss a part of this program or want to hear it again, Ave Maria programming can be made yours when you order. Just call 734-930-4506. Within a few weeks, you'll receive a copy of this show and any others you want to order on CD. Call 734-930-4506.
As Catholics, the Mass is the center of our faith. We celebrate it every day. We know all the responses, we know all the gestures, but do we really understand what it all means? Hello, this is Dr. Edward Sree, inviting you to discover the riches of the liturgy in a biblical walk through the Mass, a five-part study that many parishes will be offering during Lent. In this study, we explore the biblical roots of the words and gestures we experience in the Mass, and we see their profound significance in the context of the new translation, giving you helpful insights for getting the most out of every Mass. More information can be found on our website at guidetothemass.com. While there, you can view video clips and learn how you can review the program at no cost. That's guidetothemass.com. May God bless you.
Our economists believe conditions are improving and that